Hey, this is Matt Cain with the San Francisco Giants, and you guys are listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants with hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, and Ben Lee.
Let's go!
Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball history, the San Francisco Giants, this is TortureCast.
Welcome, everybody, to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. This is episode number 89. My name is Willie Dills, and we are smack dab in the middle of the season. One game out of first place. A lot to talk about. Just finished the series with the always interesting and currently very hated for several reasons Dodgers. And we're going to talk about all of that. We've got a full cast tonight, which is fantastically exciting as well. So let's go ahead and introduce all of my co-hosts. First, we're going to introduce the one, the only, Mr. Chad King. What's up, buddy?
We got the gang back together, boys.
Finally. It took a long time. But, you know, we did have some episodes come out, like some solo episodes recently. So it wasn't like we were totally MIA.
Oh, no. And you had a couple exciting. Of good side podcasts, kind of, not yeah. bonus shows, but bonus show like.
Yeah, I haven't had a chance to talk to you guys about that, but yeah, that was really cool. So maybe we'll touch on that at some point. Of course, we also got all the way from the hot, humid Floridian Florida man, our own Florida man.
Hey, Florida man.
What's up, buddy?
I'm a step above Florida man. I'd like.
Okay, yeah, which is got to be honest. That's not saying a lot, man. You're talking about Florida man here.
I know. It's so hot down here. I get it. People do crazy things.
You think that's what it is? As a Floridian?
No, I don't. I think there's a lot of idiots moved down to Florida. And it seems like America's Australia, but
for some reason, it just seems like an enticing place for idiots, huh?
Yeah. Everybody flocks here because they can be stupid here, apparently.
And then, of course, we've also got Mr. Ben Fried Duck Lee. What's up, dude?
What's up? I'm really grateful to not be a Floridian tonight. And with that,
wow, good one. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, Eric, don't count. You're from Chicago. Don't worry about it.
That's a good point, actually. Yeah. All right, so we got all four of us here, and we're going to touch on what's going on with the Giants these days. It's a little bit of sad news as well in Giants land, but you know, we'll this will be a mostly happy episode because guess what? After the terrible start and some nice ups and then some downs, we're at one game out. That's pretty good. So this is a happy time in Giants land, I think. When we're only one game out of first, like things are good. Things are going well. So let's talk about the recent series against the Dodgers, where it was essentially two games where we just kind of beat up on them, and then one game where Tim Lincecum was kind of crappy Tim Lincecum, right?
You know, they had to save all the offense for one game just so they could at least get it out of their system. It was a charity case.
We just were like, we feel bad for you guys. We were stomping on all over.
You know, we're 9-2. We can go 9-3. That probably won't bite us later.
It would have been nice to sweep him again, though, I got to say. I mean,
you know, I can't argue.
Would have been the third sweep of the season, too.
Which is crazy to me. I mean, the Dodgers are, correct me if I'm wrong, the Dodgers are the more talented team, right? Like on paper?
Like Adrian Gonzalez gets stronger by swimming in cash. That's how that team works.
But can anybody make an argument that the Giants are like the more talented team on paper? Is there anybody who can give me a compelling argument for that?
When they're healthy, I think possibly. I'm starting to after watching all these Dodgers games. If they don't bring up this Cuban kid, they've got Olivera in their farm system to play third, because I don't see that Justin Turner is any better than Matt Duffy.
It's second either. Weird.
Yeah, exactly. So I think, you know, if you really match them up, the Giants have two, you know, good starters in Bumgarner and, well, okay.
Yeah, but I mean, if you took both lineups and you wrote them on a paper and you stuck them on the wall and just stood there looking at the names that were on them, you'd probably just kind of point to one and go, well, that's a kind of a lineup of destroyers right there. And it, yeah, it is a lineup of destroyers as long as they're not playing against a little team named San Francisco.
Yep.
Yeah, but with Pence healthy, when he's healthy, with Posey, with the way Crawford swings the bat, when Belt's going right, I guess, yeah, you're right. Everything comes with a caveat, so no.
Yeah, if you literally just wrote the names on paper, it'd be one thing. Now, if you're looking at their stat lines, I mean, this is a team that up until about a month ago was all batting over 300.
That is true, yeah. Yeah, it's tough to say that a team isn't super talented when they all have the potential to do that, but
and when they're all going at the same time for a minute.
Yeah, the Giants are kind of like one of those teams though, where like they have a ton of potential in the lineup, but they can't ever quite get everyone kind of all like hitting on all cylinders.
Literally, there was like a week where everybody was running on all cylinders all at the same time, and then that was about it.
And then they came home,
and then Angel Pagan.
Sure. But either way, the Giants do seem to have the Dodgers number, and I can't quite put my finger on why yet.
I think they just play up to the occasion. You just look at their playoff performance, and I think they treat the Dodgers as a playoff team, and I don't know why. I mean, you really shouldn't get up more for the LA games than the other ones, because what that suggests is, well, do you not care about the other games? Are you meaning if you try harder versus, you know, Houston or Chicago, yeah, or someone else, you're gonna.
There's a certain adrenaline that goes with that too, I think, just sort of.
Well, some of it's subconscious. I agree, but I do think that it does lend to their historic performance against, you know, tough teams in the playoffs. So I think they do play up to that caliber because they're 9-3 against the Dodgers and under 500 against everyone else. Granted, only one game, but point being, they're 500 against the rest of the league. So if it weren't for the Dodgers, the Giants might be 7 or 8 games back of first place right now.
That's a very good point. And luckily, we're doing it against the other team in our division that is actually having a good season.
Luckily, we're doing it against the only team that's ahead of us right now.
Yeah, the only team that actually matters.
Choosing that.
So a little bit of bad news, though, as well, is Hunter Pence, when he came back from his initial injury, he came back and he was absolutely on fire and then just started having a little bit of trouble again. And it looks like he may miss a lot more time. Yeah. So it looks like he's going to miss a lot more time than initially, because, you know, initially it was just like, well, he's going to sit down a game. He's having a little bit of discomfort. And now it's turned into he's going to be out till after the All-Star break with tendonitis. So it's a rough one. So, Eric, I'm curious to know, like, what do you think the Giants' answer is in the outfield? Do we need to do something here, or are we going to be able to get by with the guys we currently have?
I think they can get by with the guys they currently have. He's not. Maxwell runs into one. If you want to play the left-right split, the biggest concern was if Aoki had actually been out after getting smoked in the foot the other day. But since it looks like nothing's broken, I think the shuffle is fine. I think they can weather the storm if Pence is done till the All-Star break. Because if he comes back, it's like making a mid-season trade.
Oh, it really is. Yeah, we've actually experienced the Pence midseason trade, and having him come back is like the same thing. The other thing too that was a big plus here was Gregor Blanco actually returning. So we do have a little bit more of,
just
like,
in
we
time
have some more pieces,
thankfully,
to move around.
And he jumped right back in too. Yeah,
it's kind of funny how much hate Blanco. I wouldn't say hate, but you know, a lot of people. Oh, it's just Blanco. It's just Blanco. And then when he's gone for a couple of weeks, you realize how much you actually miss the guy.
Yeah, no, he plays good defense. So, you know, we've seen Pagan struggle a little bit in some certain games here and there. Which, yeah, I mean, Pagan is fine in center field, but it's nice to be able to have the option of Blanco. And
Blanco, you know, is going to bring it. Or he bats about 274 almost every season. I mean, you kind of know what you're getting with him. If you leave him in as a starter, he's going to get exposed a little bit. And if you're using him where you need him as a fourth outfielder, you're going to get a lot, frankly.
Yeah. No, I mean, he's so versatile. He can play literally every single position in the outfield, so it's just nice to know that
shortstop,
we've got that guy. He can move around out there. We actually, if you think about it, with just Blanco and like a guy like Duffy, we can kind of work with whatever happens, which is kind of nice. I wouldn't say the Giants are deep. Yeah. Well, I wouldn't say the Giants are deep, but I would say they've got some really quality, like two really quality guys who can actually do whatever is asked of them, which is a nice problem. All right. Should we talk about, before we do this, let's talk about Angel Pagan. He's been shuffling up and down the lineup, trying to find a place where he can actually get back on track. Third is third it. Who thinks third is it? Is that where he belongs? Is that where he's going to find his swing again? It's kind of odd to have a guy who's been scuffling for such a long time move into the third slot, but he has over the last seven games been hitting almost 300 again. So is this where he should be?
I posed the question in the notes just primarily because there's no power from him. There's nothing but singles and singles and singles. The fact that he's only got eight doubles, three triples, and no home runs, it kind of scares me a little bit. You want the three hitter to be a little more productive than that. He has. You're totally right. He has hit better lately. Like, it seemed like that little bit of a blow he got helped him out. But he's just not like shooting the ball gap to gap. You know, all his base hits are just, you know, humpback liners over the shortstop, things like that. It seems to be about time that maybe they want to try. I know Duffy bat third last night, but maybe they want to try it like Duffy or Crawford or somebody else in the three hole who is making more consistent loud contact.
And Crawford is consistently making loud contact right now. I kind of feel like he's maybe the guy for the moment. It's a little scary to have Duffy as your third hitter, I gotta say. Yeah. It's a little scary.
I agree. In fairness, I mean, he's hitting 290.
Yeah.
Like, I forget that sometimes. Like, in my head, I go, oh, he's been okay. He's doing all right. And then you look and you're like, never mind. He's hitting better than Pagan and Gregor Blanco.
Yeah.
Well, the thing we know about Bochy is he doesn't like to put kids in a position where they can fail. And he doesn't want to throw Duffy in there, I'm guessing, at the third spot.
Potentially under the bus.
Right, and he doesn't have that much time under his belt. I mean, putting like Buster fourth, that was different. That's Buster F and Posey, man. That's totally different. But Duffy, I think Crawford is somebody who's just matured enough that he can handle the role. You know, if he needs to, if there's already guys on first and second and he needs to shoot a certain hole, he can do that. I think it's hurting Buster to not have, you know, somebody who's consistently getting to second base or, you know, getting on base in front of him like I think Pagan should be doing. I don't know. It just bothers me. The guy has no power. I think he's on his decline.
No, it's a good point. Like, Posey needs to be a threat to the other team, right? You know, he has to be somebody that you have to pitch to because you need to get an out here. And when you can kind of pitch a little bit careful to him, he's much less effective. He's not a guy who's going to take a walk and then start rallying necessarily because he's so slow.
No, and you know, a lot of times third place hitters, or at least hitters right in front of the best hitter on the team, which is Buster Posey, they tend to benefit because the pitcher doesn't want to put them on base. So they usually come in a little bit more in the sense of, you know, better pitches to hit because they don't want to walk them. Basically, they're going to be a little bit more around the zone. And typically those players are going to have higher batting averages. But right now, Pagan is actually on a downward trajectory. He hit in April, 341, in May, 275, and now this month of June, 186. And like you said, Eric, zero power whatsoever. And in fact, he's only hitting 230 off of right-handers, which is kind of concerning because that's the most often, you know, pitcher you're going to see. He has 187 at-bats, and he's only hitting 230 against them. So that's not a good sign.
And it's going to be a problem if we can't get him turned around. He's a big igniter for this offense.
So do you guys – Willie, you said it. You'd be good with – I'm good with Crawford. You other guys, is that who you could see slotting in there? Chad, Ben.
Crawford in third really isn't one of those things where, like, I've always liked Crawford as a second spot hitter, but obviously Panic's doing that fine. It's fair to say, though, I mean, Crawford's hitting better than we've ever seen him. So, I mean, if you're going to try anybody at third, Crawford has some speed. He's hitting the ball well, and he's doing it straight up the middle, and he's slapping it. I mean, he's doing the things that you want out of, like, a 1-2-8, but he's doing it consistently enough that he can be absolutely useful as a three getting on ahead of the four. So Crawford's one of those guys where he's like, if you're in a swing spot, you don't have somebody who's a prototypical three, Crawford can make it work statistically. But I've always liked Posey at three as a hitter. I just don't like Posey at three as a runner. But as a hitter, you know, he's hard to argue with because he's going to hit it consistently and with some authority.
I personally might want to see Posey actually hitting third. But if he's going to be always locked into the cleanup spot,
which I'm not against either.
No, I mean, but with what they have right now, I think the Pagan experiment has run its course. It's not that they would be off much better with anyone else, I guess. It's kind of like maybe a slight upgrade.
I mean
that's the thing. It's like there's no obvious answer here.
You know, When Belt's hot, he would be a decent three because he's got a little speed on him. Crawford has been more consistent, so he wouldn't be a bad three right now. Like, if you're going to drop, because, I mean, Pagan kind of, when he's hitting, is the answer there in a way. It's just that he's not. So that gives you, that raises some questions.
Yeah. Casey McGee, there you go. Answer.
Solid. Yeah.
Good answer, sir. Good
yeah.
Answer.
If Panic has already knocked in Aoki by the time he's gotten to the play, then we don't have to worry about McGee hitting into a double play.
That's right.
Do more, Joe Panic. Save everyone.
Yeah. Panic should just hit 1 through 8, and then we'll figure it out.
And then Matt Duffy hits 9. It's fine.
Yeah, perfect. We're not going to be much of an offensive team without Pagan, though, right? I mean, he's kind of the years where we were actually clicking, or the times, the months where we're actually clicking, Pagan was clicking, right? I mean, he's kind of the catalyst.
Yeah, in fairness, we didn't have Nori Aoki in those years, though, and I do think that changes the landscape a little bit of the lineup. But yeah, I mean, anytime Pagan's contributing, he contributes a lot.
I just don't think he's going to be contributing much more. I frankly think the injuries and stuff are catching up to him. He's on his downside, and there's got to be another combination of guys clicking to lead the way. And like Ben said, Aoki and Panic are doing a hell of a job at the top.
Yeah, I mean, I know we're going to talk about this soon, but you know, maybe there'll be some magical DL stint that Pagan actually ends up going on, because he does look a little rusty right now, and sometimes they find excuses to put these guys on the shelf for a couple of weeks to get their head straight, and maybe that he does have some chronic aches and pains that he needs to take care of. I mean,
this far into the season, everybody does.
Yeah, and I mean,
you're never lying on that DL.
No, and he's not too old, but he is, you know, injury ridden, and he's in a slump right now. So I think the old angel is going to be back at some point this season, right when the Giants need him.
So you think, yeah, it's just a matter of, but then, so how do you keep him fresh while you're leaning on him a little bit? Do you have to rest him more often? Do you have to kind of give him the Buster Posey treatment and, you know, day games after
if they
night
think
games,
that's,
stuff like that?
That's what's wearing him down. Yeah, absolutely. I think you do keep him out of, you know, 1 or 2 games a week.
And they've been starting to do that a little bit. You know, it's, you know, you had the Bochy, the line, he came in and you just kind of like, oh, you know, went ahead and gave him a bit of a mental off day. It looks like you kind of use it. So, I mean, it's giving him a little bit of time off is something that I think they're starting to notice and consider, and that's good. Pagan's not getting any younger, but I mean, he's still working hard out there. It's just we're not seeing any results right now, and that's something that can be really difficult to swallow.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, Ben, what is this 1 month of every day Matt Duffy writing a report card? What's going on here?
May 24th is the day that Matt Duffy took over as the everyday third baseman. It was probably the biggest, aside from injuries, the biggest lineup change that I think we've seen all year. And I just kind of wanted to take a quick look at kind of what he's done since then. And, you know, I'd get a feel from everybody else, because honestly, you guys have gotten to probably see more games than I have lately. Well, some of you. I've gotten to see some, but only so many. But, you know, I think he's been starting to look a lot more comfortable at third base as a defender. He's in the entire month that he's been there, he's made 3 errors. Some of them have been bad hops, things like that. But he's also hit 4 home runs, and he's had 5 multi-hit games. And, I mean, he certainly hasn't looked uncomfortable swinging the bat since he was put in as an everyday player. So I wanted to get some of your guys' thoughts. It's been about a month since we saw a big, you know, the big rookie takes over for the grizzled veteran. And it's not something you see a lot. So I just kind of said, you know, about a month in, where do we stand? What's everybody feeling about Matt Duffy, the everyday third baseman?
Love him.
All right. I mean, I think if you're going to give him like a report card, I think you have to give him an A just because he's been more than we expected, you know?
Hey,
like, we didn't expect him to come in and be an all-star, but we definitely needed him to just be not a black hole at third base like he was. And I have to say he has not been a black hole at third base. He's been contributing to the offense, helping win ball games. It's about all you can really ask for out of this guy.
And helping on both sides, which is, I think, what we really wanted. You know, we were spoiled a little bit by On Pablo, which, you know, On Pablo would be flying around third base and be making ridiculous plays and be contributing all over the place with his bat in insane ways. And that, I think we've been spoiled a little by that, but Duffy has done some of that. He's worked both sides of the plate, and he's done it well. So I think that's been nice.
Let's look at him compared to the entire team here. So over the last 30 days, he's actually second on the team in RBIs with 14, only behind Posey, 17. Like you said, he's got 4 home runs. He's got four doubles and a triple, so 5 extra base hits, or 9 extra base hits, including the home runs. And he's taken 6 walks. He's hitting .280, .349 on base percentage, .469 slugging. These are all pretty decent numbers. So I can't imagine anybody thinking that he's not, like, at this point he looks like the answer, and we can worry about other spots, right? Like, we can just slot him in there and say we'll be fine if he does this for the rest of the year.
Well, and yeah, it's kind of one of the people that we're least worried about now, which is kind of a nice change.
Sure, sure. I mean, Eric, what do you think? You haven't said much here, but.
Well, just because he's I'm totally good with him slotted in where he is. It's been a pleasant surprise, and like you said, there's nothing. He's improving in his fielding. You can see that they're definitely working with him, and they're positioning him in certain ways that give him a better chance to succeed. He still has to learn better when to cut Crawford off necessarily at certain times, but that's a youth thing. That's not even a new position thing. That's just still learning the game of baseball thing. He's been far and above the expectations I had for him. It's like you said, he's not something we have to worry about, and that's kind of surprising and pleasantly surprising.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when that move was initially made, it was just kind of, it's a desperation thing, you know. McGee's not working. We need someone to do it. He's been good in the roles he had, but you can't just expect the guy to move into that position and be a 280 hitter. And that's exactly what he did. So I give him an A. I give him a straight up A. Unless he goes into some massive slump at some point, that's his job now. He's like third baseman.
Well, and he's not liking hot chicks on Instagram while he takes a shit during the game either, so.
Oh my God, can you believe he did that? And you know, he totally was probably creeping or something like that and accidentally hit the like. I mean, come on, man. How stupid.
Yeah, Pablo's turned into
kind of a punchline.
Comically, tragically bad now. Hitting bad, fielding bad, making bad decisions. You know, it's. And I had a Red Sox fan tweet at me, and he was like, "You take him back?" And I'm like, "Nope, you're stuck with him, buddy."
No,
all you guys.
We got Duffy now. It's all right.
Yeah, we got Duffy. Duffy's putting up the same numbers Pablo did last year, essentially. Actually, Pablo was like much lower than a 280 hitter at this point last year. All right, let's bring up some really just awful news. We only had this guy on our team for what, like a year and a half,
2 years.
Daryl Hamilton, Hambone, dead at the age of 50, and apparently a murder suicide. So this is like the Steve McNair kind of situation almost. Although was this like a mistress, or was this like just the person he was with? I didn't catch the.
They said
story.
That she was the father of their child that was in the house, a 14-month-old.
But she was the mother
kid.
Of the child.
Yeah,
the
they
house.
Didn't. I don't.
So they were together.
Yeah, I don't know if it was an ex-wife, a wife, a mistress, a girlfriend. I have no idea. But
okay, because the Steve McNair thing was like, that was like a mistress who thought he had another mistress and all this craziness. Daryl Hamilton, he seemed like he had a little more of a head on his shoulders, but. It's hard to say, but it's just really sad. And it's he was a good Giant while he was here. He was a damn good Giant.
Yeah,
played for the Mets most of his career, right?
Yeah, Mets most of his career.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed
Brewers
him the last
a little bit.
Yeah, he was drafted by the Brewers. I really enjoyed him on MLB Network, to be honest. Saw him quite a bit. He was just a real intelligent kind of guy. Broke things down, was kind of loose and fun, carefree, you know, that kind of guy. And a lot of people have been coming out from Major League Baseball, of course, today saying nothing but the best things about this guy. And I mean, who knows what happened in the house? It's all conjecture, but looks like she did the deed, which it's just really unfortunate.
Yeah. I think that we can say for sure, because that evidence is pretty, that's pretty easy to figure out pretty quickly. But it's,
you know,
that's just
sad
a
about
scary
him
situation.
Was,
sure.
He was the guy who had the first ever interleague hit.
Right. Against the Rangers.
Oh,
the
yeah,
Giants
I do remember
and,
that.
Rangers
as a Giant.
Faced off. Yeah, the Giants and Rangers faced off in the first ever interleague game, and he was the guy who got the first hit ever in an interleague baseball game.
Yep. Oh, wow. Was he our leadoff hitter at the time?
Yeah, I believe so, yeah.
So it was like the first at-bat of the whole thing?
I think it was something like that. And he was the center fielder of the 97 team that really, you know, the Brian Johnson year and everything like that. So I mean, he was here for good times.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So just... anybody who's more closely affected by that, you know, send their thoughts out to them. And a lot of Giants fans have been posting about it, posting up their sadness about the situation. So just wanted to mention it. You know, it's not like he's somebody whose career I followed really closely or anything, but when he was here, I was definitely, he was a good Giant for sure. Yeah. All right, let's talk about the big question, because we do have something looming here in Giants land. This is actually going to be a very interesting scenario. I don't know what the right answer is here. we've got Peavy and Kane getting closer and closer to making their return to our rotation. So when you consider that, that sounds like great news. But that means that we've got five guys currently who are pitching, and do we just sit two
not,
of them? What
not
do we
all
do?
Of them well. That's the issue.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. Now, we have established through Bochy, at least so far, no six-man rotation. And, I mean, less Madison Bumgarner is always bad, so that does make some sense. But
Bumgarner and Heston, I feel like, are the untouchables.
Heston is not good either. Right. So, I mean,
I feel like they're untouchable at this point.
Our rotation is neither, as a whole, good or bad enough for us to go to a six-man.
Right.
No. And it doesn't really make – I mean, the argument to do it would be that we've got some age in some of our arms when you talk about – you know, Vogelsong is definitely an older pitcher, and, of course, Hudson. And then you're talking about bringing back a guy like Peavy, who's also not old necessarily, but – just kind of an older arm. I don't know. Something about it. He's an older arm. Yeah. And then Kane is a question mark. So both of these guys are question marks just because of the nature of the injuries they're coming off of and the nature of their careers and where they are. So I don't know. I guess who do we move down to another position? Does anybody have an answer here?
You know, when I recorded with Me, Myself, and I last week, I kind of talked about this, and this was before Lincecum's start yesterday, of course, and I was guessing that Vogey and Timmy would be put in the bullpen when those two came in, just because of their inconsistencies. They're very up and down. I think they need something a little bit more consistent in the starting lineup. Of course, since then, Bochy's come out and said, well, I shouldn't say Bochy, but there's rumor now that Huddy's going to be put on the DL with some magical, mysterious injury or what have you. So that probably
fatigue.
Exactly.
Fatigue
old,
syndrome.
Old man syndrome, right? OMS. I suffer from that. And I take two of these a day. So I do think that's going to happen. So it's a question of, you know, which one of them are they going to put in the bullpen? And I got to say, I got to put Timmy in there only because he's been so up and down. Lately, he's been more down than up. Like 17 runs in his last 21 innings, blown out his last start, shortest start of his career, and he has experience in the bullpen. He knows how to do it coming out of it. So I think that's a logical choice right now. And he's in the last year of his contract. I mean, they're not going to burn any bridges by putting him in the bullpen. So he's going to accept it, and everything's going to move along, nothing to see here kind of thing.
I think I'm with you on that. The one thing, though, I will say is that when Vogelsong signed his contract to come back, he essentially said he knew he had to win a job.
Yeah.
And I think at that point, Timmy was kind of more, he's gonna get a job.
Timmy had the option, the job to lose, so to speak.
Yeah, so Vogey might be like below on the depth roster if there was one already established.
Yeah, somewhere. And I wouldn't be surprised to see Vogey put back in the pen. He started the season in the pen anyway.
Sure.
For like 5 minutes until
everybody started going out with arms on fire. Yeah.
Right. But, you know, it's fair to say, though, like Vogey has been consistent more recently, and Bochy likes the hot hand. So I think you're right that as far as the depth chart goes, I think Timmy's got an edge. And I think as far as recent consistency goes, I think Vogey's got an edge.
Yep.
Yeah. I think if you just look at performance only,
they've both done bullpen.
Yeah, it's true. If that's the only criteria you look at is performance, then it's Vogey. But if there's other factors at play,
yeah.
Well, the rotation becomes what? Bum, Kane, Heston, Vogey, Peavy. Not necessarily this order, but Bum, Kane, Heston, Vogey, and Peavy, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
In that situation, yeah.
Okay. See,
this is on the assumption of Hudson being taken off.
Right.
Yeah. And then the Broadway's going to get sent down with one of them getting shifted to the bullpen.
Yeah.
Which is a no-brainer anyways.
Right.
I don't know. You know, it's funny because I'd love to stick Peavy in the bullpen, but I'm sure he doesn't have the experience because, frankly, I still just don't trust the guy as a pitcher. Like, if I had my way, Peavy would have some mysterious ailment for a while. And
mysterious and setback.
You called it earlier in the year, but it's been pretty long already.
Yes, it has. You can tell I'm very apprehensive when he comes back if he's actually going to come through, because it just really bothered me. He couldn't finish anybody off, and that's the taste I'm left with. But sure. I mean, aside from that, what they're going to do is exactly what you said, Chad. And I think that that's the best they can do at this time, is put Huddy on the DL, like they said, old man syndrome. And Vogie kind of earned it. I mean, what more do you need from a fifth starter than kind of what Vogie's done?
Yeah. And things are going to change.
But Tim Sutton had an on 15-day disabled list, parentheses, old, parentheses.
I mean, this is going to change so quickly. When both of them come back 2 weeks down the road or 3 weeks down the road, it's going to change again. So we know this is not a permanent situation. Yeah. Things are always going to be in flux. People are going to get hurt.
Sure.
People are going to get blown up.
Biggie made it back up within 2 weeks.
Yeah, that was odd. I never thought we'd see that. But it happened. Yeah,
baseball people say these things have a way of working themselves out, and that's entirely possible at this point. They were talking about it in a Cubs broadcast the other day. I was kind of blown away by that.
Wow.
Huh.
It might just be based on, like, the last start when it actually happens. Like, you know, whoever had a decent start and whoever had a bad start.
Sometimes that start guy gets to justify it.
Yeah. Matt Cain's going to be back. How exciting is that? He's been gone for so long.
Yeah. Matt Cain, elbow chipless Matt Cain is coming back.
Well, his last start was July 9th of last year. So,
wow.
It's crazy.
I'm really looking forward to seeing him again. Missed the guy. Missed the guy terribly.
Yeah.
Speaking of guys we missed or guys that we really enjoy, we'll go ahead and we'll skip on deck. It's 3 versus San Diego and 3 versus Colorado, so some games in our division, and we're going to have to do well because these are teams we should be able to do well against, but we'll see. We'll see. But let's go ahead and move right into our new favorite guys. And Chad, why don't you start us off?
I got to see Brandon Belt. Statistically, he's just kind of hovering, you know. I think he's around 362 or something. I'm 362. That'd be great. 262 or something like that right now. But I like that he just accepts assignments in left field. He's moving around to allow Susak to catch and Posey to go to first to save his legs. And he's looked fine out there. And I know he says he's comfortable out there, and I believe him. But at the same time, I think we all know he'd rather be at first base.
We'd probably rather he be at first base too.
Well, so. Long story short, yeah, that's true. But to get all those bats in there and to rest his legs, and you know, we got to get Susak in there once in a while
with the decimated outfield right now. And
I think it's a sign again of that it's not the playoffs, it's just regular season. He's like, yeah, no problem, Boach. Go out in the outfield on national television. Hope I don't make a fool of myself.
And then please just put me on the mound.
And just kind of looking like his old goofy loping self. So just like the guy for kind of just doing it for the team, you know, good old baseball guy.
I like it. I like it. Good pick. Eric, who you got?
It's funny. I just mentioned Crawford earlier with the three hitting. I'll take Crawford because you look at the way he's been playing this year. He's absolutely matured as a hitter and shown that can be put in the lineup facing left-handers. There doesn't need to be a split. I mean, we've seen a whole lot less of Joaquin Arias this year than in years past because Crawford's able to stay in there. He's able to drop the bat head on the ball. And just the way he is in the field, think about the fact that he's already had to deal with McGee, then Duffy, after spending the last few years with Sandoval. And over on the other side, you know, he's got Panic now, so he's got some spring training in with him. But it's been a rotating door, and he's always been able to, you know, maintain and stick with the same guys. And on baseballreference.com, if you go by their WAR, he's their best player based on WAR. He's got a 3.3 wins above replacement right now. So Crawford, totally not just, you know, new favorite guy. He's always been one of the favorite, but I just really enjoy watching him play right now.
Yeah, he's really turned to like something. He figured something out at the plate where he's getting both cheeks into pitches now. Way more than he ever did before, and making loud contact. And when he makes loud contact, he's strong enough.
Well, no, he's been hitting the ball hard, even with outs. Yeah.
It's not a lot of authority, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think he's just a lock to make the All-Star bench with Bochy? You know, I know he can't pick all the reserves, of course.
The bench is very likely, but I don't know about a lock. Yeah, yeah. I think it's likely.
I think
very likely.
He has made his case, though, this year in a big way.
Yeah.
Yeah, and no one's like, there's not going to hear anybody, if he is on the team, say he doesn't belong there. He does. He absolutely does.
Yeah.
Well, if we do hear, it's just because they never see him on the East Coast.
Sure. Yeah.
Flip it. They don't have a clue.
But there's no way they can look at his numbers and say, oh, he shouldn't be here. Like, there's just, right. You can't. I'm going to go ahead and just grab Blanco, not for anything special that he's done recently, but just because we missed him, we needed him, he just came back at the right time. And you know, it just makes Bochy's life a lot easier to be able to move people around with a guy like that. So
yeah, we haven't broken ourselves down to only two outfielders. We've managed to survive that.
It's been rough, man. It's just like you think you got him back. You think you're about to move into like, oh, now we've got this cool problem of Aoki has to like swap back and forth with Pagan and move around and do all, you know. And nope, no more. Fence is gone. And we need all the help we can get out there in the outfield. So just glad to see him back. Ben, who you got?
Well, I'm going to go ahead and go with the player who is currently fourth on the team for batting average, who's actually, despite like a 60-game or a 60 at-bat differential, he's about 2 points behind Buster Posey. And that's Matt Duffy. So, really has shown a lot this year. Really just, even after a couple of clutch at-bats last year, I don't think anybody expected him to show up and do the same thing he did as a pinch hitter for a brief time last year, just all the time. So, I mean, he's been one of our better guys with runners in scoring position. And when Duffy comes up and there's somebody on base, actually, for a second, you start to get that feeling of, yeah, we might do this. It's one of those feelings that we used to have with Posey back in the day, and I've kind of got it with Matt Duffy now, and it's a weird feeling, and I'm really liking it.
Yeah, so, no, it's cool. It's cool to have faith in a guy like that who's so young and so inexperienced, but just seems to have a good baseball sense about it.
Yeah, and honorary mention, I'm going to take Hunter Strickland. Hasn't given up a home run all season. So there's your recency bias. But, I mean, yeah. You know, like 28 innings between the minors and the majors and not one. And he's looked good. He's gone after guys. He made Yasiel Puig look stupid, and I love him for that. So I'm digging Strickland right now. I'm all right with keeping him around for the moment. And I kind of would have said that until the postseason last year. So I'm willing to go back to my previous – I kind of like Hunter Strickland persona. I don't know. Like, let's do it again.
He's filthy when he's on, and now that he's actually got more tools. Mm-hmm. You know, he's not just yep. here
fastball,
hit it.
Fastball, fastball, which is, fastball. That was the problem. Fastball.
You get to the playoffs, and there's too many good hitters on every team, and you know it's not gonna. He blistered through the regular season last year, and then it just got to the point where he ran out of ways to fool people, which he didn't have many of anyway. So
I need now to get him out. I'm gonna kill with my fastball. Yeah. I didn't see that coming at all, Hunter Strickland.
Yeah. Just adding a two-seamer and has been just a huge, huge boon for him. So good thing to mention him there. All right, let's hate on some people. Chad, start us off, man.
This is a big one because some evidence came out today. The all-time hits leader, Mr. Pete Rose, Mr. Hustle himself, of course, has always denied that he ever bet on baseball when he was a player, let alone his own games that he was playing in. He, of course, finally admitted that he bet as a manager. But no, as God is his witness, never, ever had he ever bet on a game as a player. Well, there was a little ledger book that was kept by his, not his bookie, but his little assistant there. And actually, it's ties to the New York crime syndicate, organized crime there. And he was betting thousands of dollars every day, including his own team, for and against. So pretty damning evidence. I guess they knew about it in 1989. It just wasn't admitted as part of his ban. But now it's been rediscovered. And so I think that's the proverbial nail in the coffin for any hopes of reinstatement to the Hall of Fame. In fact, he was supposed to have a meeting with Manfred after the All-Star game or during the All-Star festivities. And I think that's going to be a very awkward meeting if it happens at all. So, I mean, the guy's always screamed douchebag. You know, especially with how he makes his money and how he's always selling his image and just always crying about getting back in the Hall of Fame. And this is kind of like a ha-ha. But, I mean, I know there's a lot of Pete Rose fans. I mean, I do really admire and respect his accomplishments. So you can't take that away from him. But he really has sullied the game of baseball in a bad way. And if he was betting while he was a player on his own games that he was in, I mean, that's just – doesn't get much worse than that. I mean, to me, that's worse than PEDs. But that's just my own opinion. But yeah, good luck, Mr. Rose. Great ball player, but not a very good human being.
After this All-Star game, we won't see him for a while. Yeah,
he's done. I mean, I can't believe like he's gone this long without finding any evidence and just destroying it. He's just, it's like, dude, you're really going to come out and like campaign for yourself? And there's evidence. There's evidence, man.
Yeah,
you're not going to get away with this. So, yep, he's done. All right, Ben, who you got?
I'm gonna go ahead and pick Yasiel Puig because somebody had to do it, and
sure.
I'm not sorry.
The weekly Puig.
couple of of moments of just dumb and or laziness in the outfield, as you often see with Puig. Man's talented though, and I'll give him that. But then to turn around and say like, well, we're not worried about the Giants. Our only rival is St. Louis. Like, one, that's a gross misunderstanding of the entire team that you currently play for. And two, the only reason that we're not your rivals is because we've been beating you 9-2 at the time that you said that.
Sure.
So I think,
you know what it is though?
I got a hand on what's going on.
You know what
here.
That is to me? That's like LeBron saying, I'm not worried. I'm the best player in the world or something like that. Like just
right.
trying to deflect whatever the guy's saying to him in this kind of pompous way. And,
right. Yeah.
You know, it's just not true. Like at least LeBron was saying a true statement at the time, but
right. I mean, yeah, he's not wrong, but
yeah.
I will say though, I'm not going to hate on Jose Tabata, who according to all accounts, when you watch in slow-mo in hindsight at the time, looks like he was leaning into a pitch to break up a perfect game. It's a quick pitch. Scherzer's got a live arm, and you're working on reflex. I'm not going to hit on Jose Tabata for that one.
I'll point this out. It's not on Tabata. It's on the umpire to say that he leaned into it. And Tabata is essentially doing what you're supposed to do, which is try to get on base.
What you train yourself to do. Which
it's kind of hard to hate on somebody just because of some historical moment. You know, it's like,
and the pitch wasn't like over the plate, and he jutted his elbow out. It was clear.
Yeah, it was an inside pitch.
Yeah. Yeah.
He didn't.
So, okay, like you know when they get pissed because the guy bunts or something like that with a no hitter, it's like you know, shut up, man. They're playing baseball. You gotta earn a perfect game.
With the bunt, at least I kind of get it because you have to think ahead to do a bunt and decide to do a bunt. That was a reflex, and that's something that you train yourself to do better, to look like you're getting out of the way while you turn into the pitch, you know?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I think if anything, you can say that the ability for these guys to be wearing these ridiculous shoulder pads and elbow pads, you know, that allows them to do it. If you want to talk about anything, like talk about the rules that are in place and the umpires like never enforce the rule that you're supposed to move out of the way of the pitch. Like it just doesn't happen. And if the umpire would just enforce it, then the players wouldn't do it.
I remember Chris Iannetta used to just kind of like stand there and get hit. Like he would barely even flinch and just boonk. And that's all right. Look, Chris Iannetta's on first base.
Craig Biggio got talked about how good he was at getting hit by pitches for so long. Mm-hmm. It's ridiculous to then suddenly say like with two outs in the perfect game, now this is off the table.
Well, did you see his at bat too?
I'm not allowed to do this anymore.
I mean, he had fouled off five pitches. I mean,
exactly.
I mean, I didn't
rate at that.
He earned it.
I thought Scherzer was going to mow down everybody after like three pitches and suddenly he was an out away. And then Tabata just takes him right to the edge before he gets hit.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, some people are hating on him, but I agree. First of all, I think it's a reflex. Second of all, if it wasn't a reflex and he was thinking, I'm going to lean into this to break up his perfect game, well, guess what? Max Scherzer shouldn't have been pitching inside if he was worried about hitting a guy. So it's his mistake, too. I mean, you know, it's baseball,
slider,
man.
Slider didn't slide.
Yeah.
I don't like any of that kind of stuff where it's like, oh, you know, he bunted to try to break up a no-hitter. It's like, well, if you're not able to get a hit off the guy, then you're going to try something different. Like, obviously, what you're trying isn't working.
Yeah.
So it's a baseball play to me, and you can't get mad at the baseball play. So, yeah, I'm with you on there, Ben. I'm glad you brought that up. We were probably never going to touch on that. So
it's not our usual area of expertise, but it is.
No, but it's an interesting baseball discussion.
Indeed.
Yeah. All right, Eric, what you got?
I'm going to hate on – I can't say the guy's first name right. I believe it's Odrysmar.
Odrysmar.
The guy that's
– Odrysmar?
Is that what it is?
Odrysmar.
Odrysmar?
Okay.
I believe
Despagne.
It's Odrysmar.
Oh, jeez, I'm scared.
Despagne. Word.
Yeah, I'll stick with the Despagne part because the Giants, ever since he debuted against them, his first ever time out – it's only small sample size. I mean, he hasn't faced any Giants player more than 10 times, 11 times, but nobody seems to be able to hit him. He's got this magic voodoo over the Giants for some reason. I mean, the only guy that's hit a home run off him so far in 8 at-bats was Gregor Blanco. He's basically been able to control the Giants. It's not even like he's striking them out or anything. It's just all off balance. So I'm hating on him because I just hope the Giants can start off this homestand positively. They really need to kickstart it. They've lost, you know, 11 million million in a row at home. And the Dodgers are in a tough stretch right now where they're playing 10 games on the road without a break in three different cities while the Giants get to welcome in San Diego and Colorado. Mm-hmm. So if they can get to Despaigne to kick off the homestand, then they can probably get it going and start winning some freaking games at AT&T. So I hate on Despaigne just because I want to put the voodoo on him.
All right. I like it.
You're going all little B, the base had got on him.
Yeah, you're little B base got him. Yeah, you're punching the voodoo doll right now.
Worked on James Harden with a little needle. So I'll take it.
I like it. By the way, you know little B is following me.
Nice.
Apparently, he's following like 1.2 million people, and he tweeted about it. And I looked at mine, and I was like, "Oh, look, he's following me." when did that happen?
I'm part of the party.
Yes. Yeah, he's just following a ton of people. Jeez. Yeah, he just follows everybody. All right, let's move on to why we will win it all. Enough negativity. Let's talk about the good stuff. I didn't have a hate-on guy this week, so I'm going to go ahead and start us off, and I'm going to say we're going to win it all.
Why are we going to win it all?
We're going to win it all because one of our returning players, and I don't know which, but with Pence coming back later on in the year after the All-Star break and Matt Cain coming back now, and those are the two that I'm really looking at. Potentially it could be somebody like PV or Pagan goes on to the DL for an extended period of time or anything, or even Hudson. One of these guys is going to be a story at one point, and he's going to come back, he's going to make a big impact, and he's going to be like kind of the key ingredient. He's going to be that extra little pinch of salt that we needed to push us over the top, and that's just going to be it. We're like kind of treading water, and we just need someone to put their hand on our butt and push us up, you know, and we'll be able to rise to the top. So I think it's just somebody who's not here yet, who's coming back at some point. And I don't know who yet, but it's going to be one of them.
I'm with it.
I hope it's Hunter Pence.
Yeah, well, Hunter Pence is probably the likeliest candidate.
I just hope it is. Yeah. I need to score.
Yeah,
man.
It feels like one player's clocking in while the other one's clocking out. That's the way this roster
exactly. Is yeah, it's just crazy. All right, Chad, who you got?
All right, so I think if you look at every single one of their championships, there's been a crucial trade or acquisition near the deadline or after the deadline, even in one case, which really helped propel the Giants, you know, to the trophy. You got in 2010. Javier Lopez, which has been a mainstay in the bullpen, was acquired right before the trade deadline. But more importantly, for the playoff stretch, you had Cody Ross. Remember they cock-blocked with the
Padres.
Yeah, that's right, the Padres, by claiming Ross off of waivers. And, of course, it ended up paying huge dividends in the playoffs. In 2012, of course, you have Hunter Pence, which, by the way, interesting butterfly effect. If they had not made the Carlos Beltran trade the year prior, most likely they would not have gotten Hunter Pence the following year through kind of this interweb of magic between the Phillies and the Astros and the Cardinals and everybody. Anyway, so 2012, you have Hunter Pence. Of course, we all know what he did. And then 2014, not as much, but it's still, if it wasn't for Jake Peavy, I don't think the Giants would have made the wild card because he was so crucial in those last two or three months. He was more than an effective starter. He was like a 2-point-something ERA. And he really solidified that hole from Matt Cain. Mm-hmm. And so I think if it wasn't for Peavy, they might have never even been in the postseason. So I think it's going to be a similar event this year. There's going to be some hole they need to plug by the deadline, and we don't know what that plug necessarily is yet, but something's going to come along, and it's going to make the difference, and it's going to kick them into the playoffs.
Come on, Johnny Cueto.
Yeah, Cueto would be fantastic. All right, Eric, who you got?
Funny. Mine rolls right off of Chad's because Bags had this really nice article about Bobby Evans today and his road to becoming a general manager. And this is a guy who just wanted to work in baseball and wanted to work in baseball so bad that he created his own internship with the Boston Red Sox. And then he cold called Major League ball clubs. And so I think that since the Giants felt it was time for Bobby Evans to take over as the general manager, I just think it's kind of neat. You know, it would be really neat to win it all in his year because of things that he helped put in motion. Again, I mean, this is a guy who didn't realize he was getting promoted until 5 days he got promoted. You know, Sabian's like, you know, the job is yours, you know, effective Friday. And Evans was like, Friday, you mean like this Friday? And like, you know, he kind of knew it was coming, but he didn't wholly wrap his head around it, which shows you how focused he is when he's doing the job at hand. So I think just to match up exactly with what Chad said, I think Bobby Evans is going to come through, show us that he is a great heir, great successor to what Sabian has built here, with what all the front office guys have built there, Tidrow, everybody on down, and I think he'll continue it. So I think Bobby Evans turns out to be a key cog to help them win it all.
I like it.
I'm with it.
All right, Ben, finish this off strong.
All right. Well, you know, we already know that Madison Bumgarner is going to be a mainstay, and he's just every fifth day, you just kind of look at the team and you go, this ought to be good. But I think if we make it into the postseason, and by if, I mean why, we're going to get there because of Chris Muffungen Heston. I don't think anybody expected Heston to come up and do what he's done, but he's done what he's done. He's looked real good doing it, and, well, I mean, I may be a little biased from having gotten to see one of Heston's better outings this year. So, you know, it's full disclaimer, I was in New York and at his no-hitter, and just watching that just kind of made you look at it and go, you know, he's had a couple of down games, but really, on the whole, Heston has looked really, really good, very strong, and pitching certainly at a level that doesn't belie his age, but at a level that belies his major league service time. So I think that if we're going to make it to the end, it's going to be on his back in a way that it was on Timmy's back and then on Kane's back and then on Madison Bumgarner's back in the past.
Did you guys talk about the no-hitter during the no-hitter while you were at the game?
Kind of, yeah. I was there with my friend Shayna, who is a Yankees fan, who the Giants are her NL team in a big way. So she's a fairly diehard in her way, but not as big as some. But she's pretty much always game to come out to see the Giants when they're in town. So we're both sitting there, and we look up at the board, and kind of like it. He'd been doing it so easily the whole time that I almost hadn't noticed until like the fifth. And it was one of those games where just like, oh man, he looks good. Man, he looks really good. Man, he looks wait. So we hit like the fifth inning, and all of a sudden we're like, wait, okay. And I still couldn't get to that point of like until like the ninth, because he was just mowing them down so easily that I wasn't even anxious about it. I went, oh, he's got a no-hitter going. Like, I didn't talk about it. In the sense that literally I just didn't say the word no hitter. Other than that, we looked up and went, oh, look at that. Oh, wow. It's
weird though, right? That he hit three guys.
That's yes. The weirdest thing ever. The second one strangest, in a row, we were just like, wait, okay. So is this the part where it unravels? Because if not, we're going to laugh about this so hard later. Yeah. And it wasn't. And I laughed about it. So
it was a strange night because I was at game night and the Warriors were playing. And so not very many people were paying attention to the Giants, honestly,
right,
in the Bay Area. And then all of a sudden I just like started seeing Twitter get a little excited. And then I was like, okay, what's going on? I started look at like my MLB app and I'm just going, wait, no, this Heston though. This isn't happening right now. And then all of a sudden,
that's roughly like my head went when sure. I was like, and I'm like standing there watching it. And I'm just like, oh. No, he's going to be fine. Like
that actually just happened. Okay.
I didn't really know what to do with my hands afterwards. Yeah.
It was an amazing moment in the young guy's career and another amazing moment for the San Francisco Giants starting rotation. It's crazy, man. I don't understand what's going on.
Someday, like 20 years from now, this stretch is going to be defined by its pitching.
Yeah, we're going to have like five more pretty soon, so don't worry.
Well, Bumgarner needs to get one.
Yeah, Bumgarner's got to be getting crap from everybody. Bumgarner needs to get
one,
right?
For sure. Yeah. And like, you know, because I mean, by the time Bumgarner gets one, like, there'll have been a no-hitter for Kyle Crick. There'll have been a no-hitter for Clayton Blackburn. There'll have been a no-hitter for Tyler Beede. And Bumgarner's just going to be sitting there at like 35 years old going, well, shit, man.
You know what, though? He's going to go, yeah, but World Series MVP was pretty good, so... Don't worry.
Well, he'll have three more of them by then.
Oh, yeah. All right. Like three more awkward Chevy conversations. It'll be awesome.
That's true. He's got more Chevy F-150s than everybody else. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of the Torture Cast. It's episode number 89. Next one's the Big 9-0. By the way, 89, that was my first experience watching the Giants in the World Series. That was quite nice. So let's... Let's talk soon, you guys. Next week, what do you say? Everyone going to be here?
Hell yeah.
All right, yep. Let's do it. If you guys want to follow us, you can follow us collectively. We're at TortureCast on Twitter. Each one of us individually is also on there. Chad is at ChadK21. Ben is at Fried Duck. Eric is at Two Out Hits, and I am at Willie Dills. You can also check out our blog, torturecast.com. Like us on Facebook. We also have a YouTube channel, so go over there and hit a subscribe button and check out any YouTube videos that we have coming up. And the Giants season is kind of, you know, June swoon, sure. But, you know, we're almost through June, so things are going to get interesting pretty soon, and we're looking forward to talking to you guys more as the season goes on. So thanks, everybody, for listening to episode number 89 of the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. We'll see you next time. Boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying, we'll see you next time.